You're listening to Death of the Reader. We are Flex and Herds. This is your Murder Mystery World Tour, and we are here, our final week, on Sins for Father Knox by...
Josef Skvoreski.
Nearly there.
Nailed it. What do you mean? How is that not perfect? Skvoreski.
I mean, it's pretty Skvoreski. Decent. It's pretty decent.
10 out of 10.
So, this is our final week with Dear Sins for Father Knox. It's been a fantastic time going through, figuring out what puzzles Josef Skvoreski has left for us.
We are doing an Atlantic romance.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing Just Between Us Girls and the third tip of the triangle, which I don't know if you'll be able to solve these ones. These ones are pretty tricky. Not quite a mathematics of Grizzly Drive, but close.
There are only... Oh, that's right, Herds. You did bamboozle me out of my points.
Nope, that was well deserved.
The first time I've lost points this show.
Yep. Well deserved on my part to thwart you at your own game, sir.
If you're going to start bringing strategy into the points game, Herds, things are about to start getting hard for you.
It's going to get heating up. Look, it's felt like a war zone in this studio ever since last week. The entire week, it's been cooking in here. Other people have been coming here being like, why is it so hot? Why does it feel like there's been a grenade exploded in the corner? That was Flex trying to take my life.
Oh, let's get on to today's stories. First of all, Herds.
Yeah?
Atlantic. What a fun story. We're on a cruise or something along those lines.
We're on a hotel, basically. Like, we're on a hotel cruise, you know, like we're on a holiday, is what I should say. We're just hanging out with all these strangely named characters.
Just before we went on air, I was hearing that you wanted to throw one of the characters overboard, Herds. Could you tell us a little bit about what your problem with Mr. Wright is?
Look, I love him. He's such a derp. He's such an idiot. He was there for Eve's conversation where she said, man, anyone who tries to make a sin pun, like a Bible pun, he's my name, man, they're just the worst. And he's the first thing he says is like, hey, you're a sin I'd like to commit or whatever it is. He's the worst.
The other character that we have on the table is Miss Abigail Wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Whose name is definitely not wrong. Suspicious and has nothing to do
her
with
name
the solution.
Is wrong. It's a real name that exists, okay?
Yeah, her name is Wrong.
Just like Mr. Silly.
I do like the way that he's clearly set this up where he's given us Mr. Wright and we're just like, oh yeah, you know, that's fine. We'll go along with that. And then we have Mrs. Wrong.
Yes,
and
yes.
Like, it's kind of obviously playing off the fact that a lot of characters in this story have very in-your-face names, like Eve Adam.
Yeah, for sure.
But as we get into the fact that the people who are organizing the guests here have misspelled Eve Adam's name
as Adams, and also they've taken Sally and turned him Silly, which is a fantastic
story. So it's probably Mr. W. Wright rather than just Wright, as in correct. And it probably is Miss Abigail
Wrong with an E.
Wong.
With an E on the end. Wrong. That's how it's spelled.
Yes. And now, Herds, I think you know what I'm getting at here. Could it be that this rule is the Chinaman rule?
Are you telling me that Ms. Wrong is actually Ms. Wong and thus is Chinese, perhaps? Is that what you're angling towards?
Well, I believe that she's half Chinese.
Half Chinese? What makes you say that?
Well, it's the fact that we're talking about her family history and also the fact that no one ever points out that she's Chinese.
Interesting, interesting.
Which also would then go on to explain the comments about the facial structures of Slavic people.
Ah, I see. Yeah. Well, we are very focused on love and war for this particular story.
Yeah, and I think let's just quickly deal with the questions box on this one. We know who killed Mr. Fukuri. It was Miss Wong, and thus the sin was the Chinaman. But I wanted to jump from that to the 10th story.
Oh, you want to just jump all over the place? What is this?
Because talking about Eve Adams' journey as a character through the entire collection, this is the big one, right? We come full circle back. We started with Lieutenant Borovka, went on a journey with Eve Adam, and came back with Lieutenant Borovka.
Yep.
And it kind of blew me away. In the opening story, An Intimate Business, it's kind of ambiguous that it's Eve Adam. Like, we know who she is from the blurb of the book. We've read the other stories, but it never explicitly describes her the same way in An Intimate Business as it does in all of the other stories.
Yeah.
So when we get back around to this last story and they're talking about their previous encounters and they're like, oh yeah, I never would have gone to America if you hadn't got me out of jail. It's like, my God.
It comes full circle.
It's such a brilliant way of bringing it back around. And the fact that I think it lends to the solution is fantastic. so many of the short story collections that I have read, and including the ones on this show, are short story collections with no cohesive narrative, with nothing to tie them all together except for this is a short story mystery collection. Carol Chapek's collection, Tales from Two Pockets, which we covered before this, was an excellent collection of stories, but had nothing tying it together.
Almost nothing. Other than, you know, maybe
a
couple of character names.
And that, I think, was an opportunity that a lot of short story authors miss that Yosef has nailed.
Yeah. If there's any part of the novel that I appreciate the most is the level of continuity between the different stories.
Yeah. I mean, I told you my solutions before we went on mic, just so that you could subtly grin and twirl your fingers if I got any of them wrong. But I believe that the solution for the last story is actually referencing something from the very first one.
Right.
Which means that the story is not only rewarding you for having read the whole collection, but also is giving value to that tie over between the short stories.
Sure. Do you want to let me know then? Who is the killer? And tell me about the sin.
Dr. Bidzovsky.
Bidzovsky?
Yes, Dr. Bidzovsky.
All right.
Peter Bidzovsky.
That's your answer, sure.
He is the culprit, and I believe they've been punished for the sin of being gay.
That sounds ridiculous.
Yes. Yes, it does.
How is that? What sin are you tying that to?
I'm tying that to rule number two, all supernatural or preternatural agencies are ruled out as a matter of course.
Okay.
Now, the thing I'm torn on, Herds, is whether we're tying it back to the whole concept that eroticism can make anything happen.
Okay.
And saying that eroticism now has supernatural powers.
Okay.
Or whether we're saying that God exists and thus God has punished them for being gay.
So you're saying that being gay makes you supernatural. Is that what you're saying here? Is that basically what's happening?
Might have to be my solution. Okay. The question is...
So you got two here. You got the red haze idea and you got the gay superpower idea.
No. The red haze is the gay superpower.
I see.
The other one is being punished by God.
Okay. So which one are you going with?
You're going to make me choose?
I am going to make you choose.
Oh my God.
Are you going with this anything is possible with love and the red haze? Or are you going with because they're gay, they're supernatural? What's the plan there?
It's a tough one. Herds.
Gotta lock one in.
Oh my God.
I know it's hard. You can't ask God for help. There is no supernatural anything here right now. Here we go.
All right. I'm going to say...
Okay.
Because our protagonist's name is Eve Adam,
okay,
we're going to drag it back around to a biblical references in the original sin.
Okay.
I'm going to say
that
it is the divine punishment of God.
For being homosexual.
For being homosexual.
All right. You locking that in?
I'm locking that in.
All right. What about Just Between Us Girls?
Just Between Us Girls.
We had this lovely discussion from Ms. Zuska about someone being murdered.
From who? Sorry, from who? Who is it from?
Zuska. Is it Zuska?
Is it Zuska?
Yeah.
Not our detective.
What? You telling me that Zuska is not a detective in this story?
Herds is scrolling through trying to make sure that he's got the facts right, and he's missed the fact that I'm pointing out my answer.
What? I'm with you. I was confused for a second. I was like, wait, what are you doing here? What are you trying to pull?
The story is described from Zuska's perspective.
It is.
And she is the one that is the linchpin in the crime in figuring it out, that is. And thus, Herds.
Mm.
And thus. It is the Watson rule.
Okay.
The Watson is smarter than the detective.
All right.
Breaking our dear Father Knox's rules.
All right. Well, that's it. You've locked down all your sins. Mm-hmm. Also, who is the killer? You should know everything by now.
I should know everything by now.
Who killed Joyce?
Herds, it was the only woman who was at the scene of every piece of evidence dished out.
What? Who would that be?
It would be Jeanette.
Jeanette? But she's such a sweet young thing.
She is a sweet young thing who clearly is tied up with Cool Jean and thus is jealous of an affair.
Ooh. It's all fair in love and war, Just Between Us Girls.
So, Herds,
yep.
My solutions on the table, ready to go. Hopefully you haven't bamboozled me this time.
Well, hopefully I have, but we'll see. The war zone ignites.
All right. We are going to be going to the absolutions in this break.
Yeah.
We're going to find out how right I was, if I got all of the sins correct. Yes, yeah. I did.
Sure you did. And we'll be talking about how fair everything was as a final wrap-up discussion.
I don't even really think we need to have that discussion. This collection,
you don't want
to? This collection has been, I mean, we will discuss it, but
we
like,
have to discuss it. It's like tradition.
It is tradition, but it's so incredibly fair that I can't accuse it of doing anything wrong.
All right.
trip?
Let's see if you got anything wrong again, Flex. Oh. And we'll have to find out together.
You're listening to Death of the Reader.
There's an aura of excitement in the room.
The absolute values.
As our mathematical genius goes about solving the mathematicians of Grizzly Drive.
Is it? Is the moment.
You're listening to Death of the Reader.
Oh, it's happening!
Your murder mystery world tour.
Is Flex with me? I'm hers, and we're watching our resident mathematician, Mr. Matthew here, solve the mathematicians of Grizzly Drive with utmost precision.
So we have given Mr. Matthew James here, the mathematicians of Grizzly Drive, with near no context.
Let's be clear here. Flex has pulled him on this rival to my very existence, this Matthew James, to undermine my authority on the show.
I think that's about right.
It's what's happening right now.
I was very unhappy last week.
I know you were.
With the outcome of Mathematicians of Grizzly Drive, it cost me a point. The first point that I've lost on this show hurts.
Yep. Deservedly bamboozled by yours truly.
So I thought to myself, we're going to approach a man who knows all. A man who has the mathematical wit in his heart. A man who has the spark of storytelling in his soul.
It's true. He's an author.
Matthew James here, our good friend of the show, has been in the process of writing a couple of novels of his own, which we're very excited to maybe talk about down the line.
Hopefully.
It'd very much be personal indulgence. We still have to coax him into putting a murder mystery into the actual story.
There is both murder and mystery, but no murder mystery, as far as I can tell.
See, this is where things have got to change, Matt. He has sat beside us writing here this little mathematical equation from the Mathematicians of Grizzly Drive, seeing if he can solve the story. We haven't even told him yet about Father Knox's Decalogue.
It's true. He doesn't need to know. That's not what matters here. What matters is, can he solve his equation? There are more equations. He's written a whole page of equations now. I don't even know what to do with this. I'd study discrete mathematics. I don't even understand what's going on.
Before this segment is over, we are going to have a solution. And Herds, I just want to know.
Yeah?
If Matt gets close enough to the solution.
Yeah?
And we prove that it is me that failed.
Yes.
I walk away with no points.
Uh-huh, that is true.
If Matt fails in exactly the same way as I did.
If he fails in a similar way to you, how did you fail? Do you want to remind us how you failed so we have somewhere to line it up with?
We'll replay the segment from last week's show.
I will say you correctly picked the culprit for the story. But not only did you pick an incorrect accomplice, but you also didn't explain the truth subsection of the box there, how and why and where people were lying and telling the truth.
Bill the Snake clearly was lying about things, and I pinned him as an accomplice. And I wasn't necessarily right about how he was lying, but I'd still say that pinning him as an accomplice would mark him as one that is not telling the truth, right?
I don't think so. He was not willingly a part of the crime. It was some random student who was the accomplice in this crime, and you did not pick that.
Uh-huh. You're going to try and weasel away with a point.
I'm going to try to weasel my way away with a point.
I don't know if that's possible. We'll see. We have 10 minutes here to figure out what's going on, but tell me, what's your butt?
If Matt fails in a completely unique way that astounds us both, that breaks the conventions of common sense.
He gets a point.
Sean Britton gets a point.
Sean gets a point! Why doesn't Matt get a point?
Well, Matt gets a point, but he's on Team Sean. He's on the guest team. It's us.
Oh, I see. We're rebranding that as the guest team.
Yes.
So that there's someone else to try and take me down. You're just trying to get me at every turn, Flex. Bring in my arch nemesis onto the show. I'm like the Powerpuff Girls, all three of them. And you're bringing like Mojo Jojo on and the Crab Lady. Like, this is happening.
All I can say right now, there is an X and Y axis drawn on Matthew.
He's drawn
James's
a graph.
Page.
It is there. It exists.
So he's already further ahead in this than I was.
It's true.
Not
so
that that is
saying basically
anything.
Lost your point already.
Pretty much. We are still go on Operation Solve. How is the approach going? How are you finding solving this murder mystery?
First approach was just to ignore them entirely. Ended up with some weird equation where I put x minus 1 and the x is an absolute value times y. The problem is when
mathematical struggle street we're on.
I don't know.
Struggle Street. I love it.
Or perhaps Grizzly Drive.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting next to the man. I'm watching him go. He's filled up about 4 pages of equations at this point. And I think he's going to be more paper. We're running out in the studio. We're running out of paper. We're going to have to go get someone, get some of the production staff to help us get more paper, more water. For this man, he's running out of both. He's running low on steam, but he's powering through.
The question is, Matt, do you think that within the time we have left, you can solve this? Or do you think that this is unachievable for the average reader?
Yeah, they couldn't solve
it. They couldn't solve it. All right.
Sure.
Okay.
Matt,
in that case, let's go on to our questions. You should know who abducted Anne Bradstreet, who was telling the truth, where and why, and which of the following 10 commandments was violated. He has the 10 commandments in his hand.
He does. He's looking through them. If you can figure out which one of these has been broken, I'll be on board with you.
Yeah. And of course, if you're unfamiliar with the rules, there is always a breakdown of them up on the podcast. The 10 commandments of Father Knox. Be sure to check that out. Matt, which do you think it is?
Well, maybe because I can't solve it, but maybe unaccountable intuition.
Are you saying that Eve Adam features unaccountable intuition? Things that she could have no reason for knowing that let her solve the crime?
Maybe. I mean, my money was on a viper.
Okay, so Matt thinks it's the viper that did it.
I like it. I feel like
it's a red herring just because he's like, I was writing or whatever it was and other things.
He's very suspicious. He's very a worm suspicious. After he's missed the snake.
Maybe it's too obvious.
Door was locked, what, from the inside?
Apparently.
She wasn't there the night beforehand. She was meant to go to Chas, but she never went to Chas.
So Snake says.
So
you think that the snake is lying, you think that the snake abducted Anne Bradstreet, and you think that the crime was solved with unaccountable intuition?
Sure, let's go with that.
As I did notice, as you were trying to solve it, you ended up with two equations and were trying to figure out, you know, which equation you were supposed to solve. The answer was both. Both of these equations form the symbol that is the answer to this riddle.
Let me go with the first, like, part of the answer, and then I'm going to try and figure it out just with a hint.
It sounds like Matt thinks he can solve it now.
He thinks he can solve it with an extra page of hints.
I think he can.
So I was able to get 90% of the way there with a page missing.
Uh-huh.
Our above-average reader, Matthew James,
true,
has managed to get 90% of the way there with an extra page.
It's true.
Herds.
Are you telling me it cancels out? Is that what you're about to say here?
I'm just saying.
Look, he's trying to solve it properly with the maths equation. Look at this man go. He's not using foreshadowing from earlier in the text. He's using actual maths.
Actual deductive reasoning?
Not even deductive, just logical reasoning.
One could argue the case that that is in fact deductive reasoning.
Disagree.
Because inductive reasoning is problematic. Inductive reasoning would in fact be the sixth sin against Father Knox.
Better watch out for that one then.
Is that the diamond on the blouse?
Oh my goodness, he's done it. He's done it.
He's figured it out, ladies and gentlemen.
The correct symbol is in fact sitting on the table in front of us.
It's true.
It is right. He has solved the equation.
And he figured out what it was too.
Has this changed your perspective on who the killer is, on how the crime was done, on what the sin was, or is it just nonsense?
That math equation was just plain weird.
Let's not pretend that this equation is meant to be user-friendly, because it is quite clearly not, as evidenced by the written solution, which, in fact, doesn't really solve it. Question is, Herds, do you think that Matt's performance today is worthy of dishing out points in any of the directions we described earlier?
Oh, I mean, you also failed completely. Let's be real.
Completely?
Failed completely. But you did not solve the mathematical equation. So Matt here has also failed, but in a completely different way. I think Matt gets a point.
You're saying Team Britain gets a point?
Team Guest Star gets a point, which Britain is heading. So yes, I suppose so. That's how this is going to be.
The arch nemesis returns.
Yep.
Herds, the distance between you and Sean Britton's team has closed. This is tragic news for you. Excellent news for me. I guess that's Mathematicians of Grizzly Drive
Again,
take two.
That's it. We're done.
We have proved that the story is in fact nonsense.
Yeah.
That extra points should be awarded for how ridiculous that solution was.
I agree. We spent a good couple hours just working through maths. Matt, I admire endurance. We're going to have to treat ice cream or something afterwards just to make up for this.
You're Alrighty. Listening to Death of the Reader. We'll be back with part three for Sins for Father Knox in just a second.
You're listening to Death of the Reader. We are Flex and Herds. This is your Murder Mystery World Tour. And Herds, being gay is magic.
What did I tell you? What did I tell you? That's literally the answer, dude. I was just throwing at you. Throwing it at you.
Oh, my goodness.
You took it a step further than you needed to. Being gay is just, it's just magic.
He is a genius. Yeah. Josef Skvoreski is, he's just a genius.
I was going to say madman. Mad genius, maybe.
I didn't think that he was going to be able to pull off the supernatural rule without actually having magic in there. But
he found a loophole. The madman.
He redefined preternatural as applicable to the writing time of Father Knox when being gay was considered abnormal.
Yes.
And thus
a sin against God, even.
The gays are magic.
Yeah, you know, it's not very politically correct, but you know what? That's just what we're gonna roll with. Was Josef Skvoreski.
I could not be happier.
I know, because you were cackling like a madman all through that 10-minute break we had there. You're ridiculous, Flex. I just want to say, look, let's put it out on the table. You got all the points for this segment.
Yes.
You get the point. You got all the things right. It was Mrs. Wong. It was Jeanette. And it was, in fact, the doctor, the good doctor who we love so much. They're all the killers. You get all the sins right. But I don't think that matters.
It doesn't.
It's only one of those matters.
The only thing that matters is that gay is magic.
Gay equals magic.
Can we get the Friday Gay Culture Show here on Death of the Reader to talk
celebrate.
About why being gay is magic?
I'd love that. But yeah, I mean, you got the point. We've uncovered that gay is magic. And we also had a lovely little wrap up there, which honestly, I've been itching for this entire time. Barovka and Eve
went on a date.
They get together at the end. I mean, it's not confirmed that they just love each other forever. They just go on a date, but there's implications, and I love it.
It is a very cute tie around to the end
it's
of the story.
So good.
I feel like there's a breach in professional ethics if you end up dating the criminal that you got out in your first case in the novel.
It doesn't matter. It's love. That's all that matters. Okay. Stockholm syndrome, breach of ethics, doesn't matter. They're cute together. Detectives got to stick together. They got to get together at the end. They got to make all the babies.
All I'm hearing, Herds, is that the next Lieutenant Barovka novel may be a buddy cop.
I hope. Oh, please, yes.
Yeah, I think the main thing that I want to discuss before we get into the absolutions, because I've now read those.
Throw it at me, Flex. What's happening?
This book has been fantastic to read, but terrible to discuss.
I think part of it is there's a lot of stuff to keep track of.
Yeah.
There is so much stuff. Like in the ninth story, having like nine different names and like the solutions don't spell things out as nicely as I'd like them to.
If you enjoy murder mystery books, this is one of my favorite books I've ever read.
Yeah, it's
fantastic. In the genre. Absolutely read this as a murder mystery fan. However, if you run a radio show or podcast about murder mystery,
don't do it.
Avoid at all costs.
it's stressful, honestly. I've really enjoyed this. I, again, will iterate, especially in the Atlantic romance. The story lays out the Wong trick nicely, but it's a perfect example of things just not being explained. It says, oh, yes, there was a certain fundamentalist wedding, and then this person was in China. It does not lay out Wong's heritage properly at all. Rubbish.
I didn't. You're right. You're right. It doesn't lay
right.
out.
But I am right. Look, I'm taking a stand today. It's happening.
I think that because that is presented in the absolution, that's okay. Let's talk about these absolutions.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because this, when we came in, was the selling point of the story to me. I was like, oh my goodness, a book with actual solutions in the back, like a textbook? Sign me up. That's a huge, huge dork.
It's very weird, yeah.
But what is with these? This is a mess.
It is a mess. They're very unhelpful for someone who's, you know, trying to, like, guide someone else through the story. I mean, the main thing the absolutions are telling you is, like, which sin is being broken.
Yeah.
It's just explaining that to you.
The absolutions start on one page in my edition of the book, and then there are just four blank pages. And when I got this copy of the book, I thought that those four blank pages would be like
here's why I did this, and here's why I did this.
Because I think getting in Josef's head about why he broke the rules the way he did and the method he used to break them would have been fascinating.
Yeah. I would love, if there is a novel that does a more detailed breakdown of the, like, authorial process, I would love to do that. Because these, like, these little snippets, these, like, you know, two or three pages of a window into his mind is incredibly valuable to see the, like, this is why I did this structure. This is why I added these characters in. This is why I broke down these rules. This is why I'm talking about Father Knox. Like, that's what the foreword is for. That's what these sorts of solutions in the back of the book are for.
Yeah.
I just don't think it goes in enough detail.
I really hope that somewhere in his many writings, and also, I believe, running a translation publishing company in Canada, Josef Skvoreski has put what I'm looking for to paper, because understanding his process would be such a fascinating thing going into this book, because it's so meticulous without ever feeling like it is. I feel like an absolute shill talking about this book, but I just love it.
We need to find Josef Skvoreski and, like, bring him on the show.
He sadly passed away in 2012.
That's... I know. We need to find his ghost. Oh. You're misunderstanding me. We need to bring on Josef Skvoreski's ghost.
So what we need to
show.
Do is find the gays, use their magic to bring back the ghost of Josef Skvoreski.
That's the one. That's how it works.
Problem solved.
Yeah, he'll be like the Casper of...
And think of how many Knox rules we can break in that episode.
All of them, hopefully. You think there's a book that does that, that, like, deliberately breaks every single sin in an interesting way? Maybe.
I'm very confused. Are you describing this book, or are you
saying... No, like,
in one story,
yeah. So, like, instead of 10 short stories where you break all the rules one at a time, we just break every rule, and it's, like, in the craziest way possible. That's got to exist.
Okay, so we...
I need to find that. Somebody throw that at me. Throw that across the room at me.
Let's quickly, before we close the show, let's theorize on that. What?
So
we'd have to have an obvious culprit.
A Chinese detective, obviously.
Who also committed the crime.
Yes.
With a device.
Mm-hmm. Some kind of trap.
A trap operated by magic.
Yeah.
The detective can't be mentioned early in the story, so the detective has to show up late.
Yes.
arrive on the scene through a secret passage.
Yes.
Must not know that they did it, because they can't light let on any clues that aren't immediately so produced for the inspection of the reader.
So they've shown up at the end of the story on, like, a boat in, like, a hidden passage underground, and they did the crime with, like, an occultist science abomination method. This is some, like, Nazi magic shit.
And they have to have a twin who is their Watson, who is smarter than them.
That's it. Done. Easy. We can write that. You told me you couldn't write that. That sounds like so much fun. Let's do it. I'm in. Here we go.
Could you write it fair, though?
No, of course not. But it'd be 300 pages, and it'd be garbage, and it would never sell. But I would love it, and I hope you would, too.
Oh, my goodness. Death of the Reader Season 2. We write a mystery.
Let's do it. And then we can talk about all the chapters. Talk about the process of writing a murder mystery.
Yeah, and book one, we break all of Knox's rules. Book two, we break all of Van Dyne's rules.
And we reconstruct them in the third book. And then that's how we make... That's millions. How we make it. Millions of cents.
Yes.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about how we'd love to see Josef Skvoreski talk about his writing process. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should talk about our own writing process.
Maybe we should.
As we write a murder mystery. I think that'd be the most amazing thing.
Speaking of Josef Skvoreski's writing process, though, Hertz.
What about him?
Did you know he first got into writing crime fiction by translating Raymond Chandler?
Raymond Chandler? Who's that? Tell me about them.
He's an author very, very famous for his work in particularly noir and slightly more hard-boiled stories.
I smell a segue coming on. Here we go.
We are covering Herd's No Crime in the Mountains.
That sounds very edgy and ominous. I love it. No Crime in the Mountains. What do you want to bet there's a crime in the mountains somewhere? How many points?
Oh, points?
We gotta bet something.
Points, Herds. I don't think you can get. All I can get points for this bet.
Wait, if you're betting that there is no crime in the mountains,
No, I'm betting there's a crime in the mountains.
No, I also bet there's a crime in the mountains.
Well, then there's no points on this.
Rubbish.
Herds. Next week we are going to be covering chapters 1 to 4 of No Crime in the Mountains by Raymond Chandler.
Is a shorter novel? Is it?
14 chapters in this one.
That's all right. It's a bit of a beefy, you know, it's a regular old book, isn't it?
It's a regular old little book.
Four chapters sounds pretty reasonable.
You reckon you can solve this one, Herds?
In 4 chapters? Piece of cake.
I should let you know, Herds, this is slightly more on the noir crime fiction-y type than specifically a murder mystery.
That's right.
But there is method to my madness.
Your mountain of madness?
Well done, Herds. And with that, you have successfully earned yourself no points.
Oh, that's all right. I'll have to earn more points next time on Death of the Reader.